Welcome to the Commercial Real Estate Investing from A to Z podcast, named one of the best commercial real estate podcasts by Business Insider. I'm your host, Steph Baldrini. We review all aspects of commercial real estate investing and bring the top people in the industry to share their best tips and lessons learned. And in today's episode, we are covering the top lessons learned over a four-decade career in real estate investing. Our guest, I believe this is his very first podcast interview. I am very excited. He is also going to be sharing what are his thoughts on the current real estate investing market compared to other poor markets that he has been through in the past. We are chatting with Steven Beitel, chairman and founder of Terra Nova Corporation. He manages their sizable portfolio of properties in several asset classes. I am very excited about this interview. Here we go. Steven, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. You were highly recommended by a dear friend. And first, I would like you to please tell us a little bit about you.
Thanks, Steph. Excited to join you today. I was born in the public hospital in downtown Miami in 1956. That makes me 67. I went to public school in Miami my whole life. I am the grandson and great-grandson of immigrants. And you know, back then in Miami, our schools had no air conditioning, which no one can believe. I went to college at Bowdoin College in Brunswick, Maine. I had a Thomas J. Watson Fellowship to spend a year in Europe. After college, I applied to law school while I was away and attended the University of Miami School of Law on a scholarship. Terra Nova was started in October of my second year in law school. The first year I worked for another real estate company full-time, which no one should ever try to do again. Maybe I should have paid attention more in law school, but I didn't. I lost the scholarship for bad grades, but you know, began a wonderful real estate career that it's amazing when you grind 100 hours a week of the results that you can achieve.
And so what kind of investments have you made, just to give a little more context to the audience?
So initially, Terra Nova syndicated amongst friends and family some strip centers and small office buildings. Tax Reform Act in 1986 kind of obliterated about a third of all real estate values. We built a very large third-party management leasing business, one of the largest in the Southeast United States. We took our profits from that and slowly started acquiring real estate again. Again, initially, we did some of the beginning ones with some high net worth individuals. And then some of the institutions that we were doing workouts for invited us to be their partners. Of course, I had no money. So they gave us a 10% profits interest once they had earned a 10 yield. After we did a few of those and they were monetized, they then asked me to start investing. So our initial investments were always $1 million. Years later, someone at BlackRock said, "Why do you always invest $1 million?" And I said, "So I can remember how much I have in every deal." They laughed and then they said, "Really?" I said, "No, really, that's the reason." Anyway, that doesn't work anymore. Today, we have one large institutional partner and one project, Morgan Stanley. We are capital source today. All of our debt is bank. We had a huge portfolio of supermarket anchor centers around the state. We traded out or bought out of most of those. We have one left. Our biggest holdings are two concentrations of high street retail. We have 15 buildings on Miracle Mile and Coral Gables, an 8-block stretch, which is the high street in Coral Gables. We also in Coral Gables have a couple of office buildings, one we just bought 7 months ago and got non-recourse financing on, which was miraculous. And then we're also the largest retail owner on Lincoln Road in Miami Beach. We have a number of other investments, including some multifamily in Austin, Texas, some office under development in Bellevue, Washington, and real estate today is half of our balance sheet. We also own an insurance company, as well as a bunch of car washes, convenience stores, and gas stations, and a whole host of other private equity investments all over the place that are disconnected without a consistent theme.
That is an incredible background, and you've been doing this for many, many years. I would love to hear your thoughts on what is like investing today compared to the past.
So I am comfortable in sharing that I think this is the hardest investment market we have ever participated in. There's staggering uncertainty about the future. Half of the pundits think we're going to have a recession. Others think we're going to have a soft landing. People just don't know what's coming, and that uncertainty freezes both debt and equity capital. Part of the challenge today is that most of the people making investment decisions have only invested in an era of continuing declining interest rates and cap rates. So you didn't have to be that good. You just had to be invested, and everyone made money. That's different. I mean, there was a gap in last quarter of 2008 and 2009, but really it goes back 15 years till then and probably another 10 years before then. So everyone almost 50 and under has only been around in good times, again, with that 2008-9 gap. That's a challenge. Second, for part of the magic of real estate investing is we always could get what we refer to as positive leverage. When I was a child in the business, when I had a full head of dark hair, which I don't have much at all of any color left, we bought things at a 10 cap. We financed them at a 7.5 or 8, and we had that 200 to 250 basis point spread between the cost of debt and what our initial yield was. So we were in the money from day one. It's almost impossible to get that positive leverage today. The office building we bought recently, we financed it at 6.89, fixed for 7 years with liberal prepayment terms. And the initial yield with some vacancy was about 7.5%. So we have a positive spread, but it's very tight. We bought it because it's 18% vacant, and we thought that the prior landlord or seller was leasing it at 41 gross, and we're leasing it at low 50s net. So we thought that was a huge spread in rental rates. And, you know, we will continue to buy things with tighter yields if we think there's a great opportunity to increase the income. Typically, when we buy a deal, we'll go to our friendly banks and get a number of quotes. It's hard to get a quote today. The small and mid-sized banks that are the primary lenders to small and mid-sized businesses are really holding on to their cash as dearly as possible because they're scared of another run on the banks as we had when Republican Signature failed. And they don't want to get caught again. So they're just not really in the lending business. Even rollover loans on expirations are harder and harder to obtain. And as deals are reappraised, lenders are asking for paydowns or additional guarantees. And we are 100% non-recourse lender portfolio-wide or borrower portfolio-wide. So debt's hard to come by. Equity's frozen because, you know, there was a moment when money in the bank was earning between 0.25%, but today it's earning 5 to 5.25%. And people are not so eager to disrupt that yield to take a flyer on commercial real estate. So it's hard today. The debt's hard to come by. The equity's hard to come by. And there's clearly a bid-ask gap between buyers and sellers.
So do you think now is even worse than the savings and loan debacle in the 80s?
So look, that was a painful moment for us. We had a number of projects. Two were on leased land that we had financed out of them, but they were given back to the land lessors. But there was money available. It was just expensive. But when the savings and loan crisis hit and the SNLs stopped lending in commercial real estate, the CMBS business, the collateralized mortgage-backed security business, immediately filled that gap. And they were there as lenders. Today, with the banks substantially out of business on new loans, private debt funds have shown up to fill the same gap, much like the CMBS lenders did in the late 80s.
Well, you're still doing real estate after multiple economic crises. I would love to hear some of the hardest lessons learned and what you would want somebody to know without having to experience it themselves.
So, look, everyone manages their cash flow because they want to have enough money to pay their bills at the end of the month, both corporately and at the property level. We have always been very focused on also managing our balance sheet. So whenever we have a liquidity event from a sale or refinancing, we immediately pay down the debt, starting with the most expensive debt and finishing with the least expensive debt. I mean, we have one large loan that we did in December of 21. That's 3% fixed for 7 years. We're not in a real hurry to pay that one down. I think the important lessons are, first, buy projects or invest in projects that you think you can grow the revenue, and do it in areas where there's positive population growth, because population growth has corrected more real estate mistakes than any other factor. So those are the big issues. Having strong capital partners is an enormous edge in the marketplace. And when you go out to bid, proving that you have the ability to close is very important. Seller financing, which was a thing 25 years ago, is a thing once again, because sellers have learned that they'll get a little higher price and they can defer some of the taxes on sale if they hold some paper and spread out the receipt of the revenues from a sale over a number of years. I think having strong partners is essential today, because anyone can send out a letter of intent and sign a contract, but sellers really want to play ball with someone that they think can close. I'm a believer today, after having getting clobbered early in my career, about being a non-recourse borrower, which means you need more equity in the deal. And whether it's yours or your partner's, non-recourse loans kind of protect you in terrible moments. And look, I'm a big believer that when you take money from the bank, you're supposed to repatriate it. That's part of the covenant, and it's important. And having that belief in your banks, knowing that you feel that way, enables you to borrow. I think the smallest banks today may have the best edge in making smaller real estate loans, but our project size tends to be larger, and it's just too much money to put out on a single borrower.
So I have two questions on your answer. Well, first, you said that you pay down your loan. You don't refinance and get cash out to move into the next project?
So, I mean, look, we did a huge cash out. We replaced a 15.3 loan with $40 million in December of 21.
Oh, okay. That's
perfection in the real estate business, because it's, you know, you don't pay tax on those extra proceeds initially. A substantial part of our portfolio is completely unlevered.
Good for you.
That's the most forgiving capital structure of all. But boy, yeah. I wasn't doing that when I was 27 and 37. You know, that's what you get to do when you're 57 and 67.
Yeah, part of real estate.
You know, that enables you to ride through a lot of things. It means we'll have fewer projects, but it also enables us to have a very disciplined and concentrated focus on everything we do. We are more in the weeds and in the details on every lease and every vendor contract than you could possibly imagine. And there was an era when I was typically in at 7 to 7:30 in the morning and rarely before 9:30 or 10 at night, except on Fridays when I was home for a family dinner, and Saturdays was a regular day. I'm not doing that anymore. But I did. Other people are doing it. I have never understood this concept of work-life balance. I always thought that if you outworked everyone, you would develop a lot of balance in your bank account. And then when you had a lot of that, you could then have a balanced life. And, you know, I really didn't have a balanced life until my early 50s. They tell me I go on walkabout once in a while. You know, I left once for a few years to build another business in the gas station, car wash, and convenience store industry. I left a couple of times to take some public service jobs. Those are meaningful and important, what you're supposed to do when you've had a lot of financial success.
On that note, then, did you get family agreement that you're not going to have a work-life balance? Because there is that side as well, obviously, for that. And then do they understand that there will be a little delayed gratification for you working a lot in your early career?
Steph, that's a great question. And that is, generations have shifted. I didn't change diapers. I didn't bathe my kids. I didn't feed them. Occasionally, I would read a book, and I didn't put them to sleep very often. You know, I had a Wonder Woman wife who did all of those things. You know, she's old world from Europe, and we had a clear demarcation of responsibilities. That is not how it is with my kids. You know, both parents are supposed to play a very equal role. I like to think that we both played very equal roles, but with very different responsibilities.
Yeah, that's fair. Very fair.
I don't know a lot of people that can do that today, but you know, that's always who I was. And I was a very serious, hardworking person in my youth, and nothing's changed.
That's awesome. Being a woman, I know that there are a lot of women open to that same old school agreement.
I don't know which is right or wrong. I just think that everyone needs to sit down and
yeah.
decide who they are, what their expectations are. I have been a really good earner for a long time, and there are lots of wonderful benefits of it. And, you know, look, I am a far more engaged grandfather than I was a parent.
Understandably so.
I mean, no one could have imagined when I was in my 30s that I would leave early, which I did yesterday at 5 o'clock, to go home and have dinner with my grandsons. That would have been unheard of.
Wow. That's great.
Sometimes, you know, when you get your second chance, you get to do it better.
Yeah. That's why grandkids are spoiled. And the other question on your answer was the non-recourse. Of course, they're more expensive, and I've seen a couple percentage more than a recourse loan. Is that what you get at this stage in your career, or are you seeing better terms for non-recourse? Could you please elaborate a little bit on that?
So I'm not sure we have a replicable model at this stage, although we certainly would have in the early years. We don't think we're paying a premium for non-recourse. We think we're taking lower leverage. But if I was advising a friend and they had to pay a quarter of a point or half a point more to get non-recourse, I would tell them to do it. You know, you want a clean balance sheet, and that's really valuable. Look, we also typically don't share financial statements and tax returns with our lenders anymore. We invite them into the office to review them, but we don't like the idea of our private financial documents being stuck in a bank's file somewhere that anyone can see.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Wow, this has been wonderful, Stephen. Is there anything else that you think is important for our audience to know that we haven't covered?
Commercial real estate's a great industry. It has been for a long time. I think it will be for a long time to come. It enables us to deploy large amounts of capital with long-term fixed rate non-recourse debt and to operate them with far fewer employees than any other industry that we're in. And when you do it a long time and hold assets a long time, over time, if you're in good markets, values tend to always increase. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't bumps in the road and bad years or two, but there's this great opportunity to build long-term wealth. It's tax advantage through depreciation and the ability for cash out financings. But this is not a part-time hobby. I mean, we have always treated this like a intensely committed full-time job. And, you know, we know all the details in every lease. And when we don't, we go read them quickly to remember. So it's a great industry, and I encourage everyone to spend as much time on it as they can. And, you know, people always say, why did I do it? And I said, when I was a kid and my parents would have their friends over who were all professionals, they would talk about that they invested in real estate with their savings. And I said, well, why don't you do that full time? And they said, well, we needed to have these other jobs to make money to do it. And I was pretty convinced from an early age that this should be a full-time endeavor, that if I knew more about my markets than anyone else, and I worked harder, that I'd have better performance.
Beautiful parting note. Stephen, this has been wonderful. How can our listeners get in touch with you?
Stephen, Stephen, at terranovacorp.com.
Thank you so much, Stephen. We'd love to have you back if you want to at some point to share more stories about your career. I really appreciate you making the time.
Thank you, Steph. Appreciate you.
And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to our very straightforward newsletter at MonteCarloREI.com on top of the page. And I will see you next time.